Production support comes from Smithville Fiber, the GigaCity Company, a philanthropic community partner since 1922 and proud supporter of numerous community organizations. More information at smithville.com. And School of Public Health Bloomington, Public Health Reimagined, addressing 21st century health challenges with a multidisciplinary approach to disease prevention, health promotion, and enhancing quality of life. publichealth.indiana.edu. Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times, along with co-host Sarah Whitmire, the News Bureau Chief of WFIU and WTIU. And we're going to have a special New Year's Day edition of Noon Edition today with two editors, newspaper editors from around the area. Max Jones from the Terre Haute Tribune Star is here with us today in the studio, as is Jeff Kovaleski of the Kokomo Tribune. We're going to talk about the year 2015, all the news that occurred in 2015. It was a busy year. And we're also going to look ahead to 2016. I'm sorry that you can't join us on the program today. We won't be taking any calls, but we'll be talking about last year, and we're going to be predicting some things going on in 2016. So, Max, Jeff, good to have you guys back, and Sarah, good to be with you.
Thanks, Bob.
All right. So,
happy New Year.
It was a big. It seems like it was a really big news year in Bloomington, anyway. What about Terre Haute, Max?
Well, you know, there was a number of things going on in Terre Haute, but seems like every conversation for the past year in Terre Haute has been dominated by this odd developing story about the crisis in Terre Haute city government's finances. And it's not a real sexy topic, and maybe that's part of the reason why it got in such bad shape over a course of really 8 years it took. And even though people have known and there has been kind of growing concern about it, it seemed like that finally this year this whole strange story erupted into something more that people finally tuned into. And I think people are starting to take it a little more seriously than they have in the past. It certainly dominated the mayoral election, the municipal election this year, even though the mayor, who is has been in charge of City Hall for the last 8 years through two terms as this was all developing, he managed to win re-election by it was closer than expected, but the big change occurred in our city council. And there was quite a movement there, and I do believe that beginning with next year, you will start to see at least a more active, engaged city council as opposed to the more complicit group that we had over the past 8 years, who just kind of went along and were at least the majority of that council seemed to just tune it all out and not pay a whole lot of attention. But now they've got a big mess on their hands.
Can you give us kind of a thumbnail of the mess?
I can. Like I say, it's public finance is not necessarily the sexiest right. thing you ever want to talk about. But in a nutshell, it came about because of the drastic change in state law about 8 years ago when the legislature adopted the tax caps on units of government, local units of government. And then, of course, it got put into the Constitution a couple years after that. So it really restricted the amount of money that could be raised by local units of government by property taxes. And what it did, it forced communities all over the state to change the way they did business. And vast majority of those did that. It wasn't easy. It was ugly. It was real messy, as Jeff can tell us in Kokomo. They had their problems. Every community had their problems, and some dealt with it a whole lot better than others. But I don't think you could point to any community that handled it the least well as what Terre Haute did. Mm-hmm. So it went from 8 years ago on January the 1st, it had an $8 or $9 million surplus in its general fund, to starting this last January 1st, it was underwater by almost $5 million, and that will be even greater when those numbers come in for this coming January the 1st. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps on sinking. There's been more talk in the past year. They tried to adopt a budget that, at least on paper, looks like it may at least stop the bleeding. That's what they're trying to do right now. I don't think anybody really thinks that's what'll happen. I think they may have slowed the bleeding somewhat with their new budget. Whether or not they have actually stopped it, we'll see. They talk about how they've adopted a balanced budget for this year, but it's really unclear whether or not that's going to happen. And still, they're going to be nursing this several million dollar deficit in their general fund that's going to take years to dig out of under the current conditions. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly what it comes down to is the fact that the leadership and the office holders in Terre Haute City government have just been able to come to grips mm-hmm. with what needed to be done to right their problem, and it's just gotten worse and worse.
Well, it's interesting. You note, I'm familiar with your mayor, Duke Bennett, and your mayor, Jeff, Greg Goodnight, through Sarah's radio station here, through Ask the Mayor. Both mayors in your cities were reelected, correct?
Yes.
Jeff? Yeah.
This is Mayor Goodnight's. He'll begin his third term in January.
So what's he known for? I mean, from your standpoint, you know, he puts a good face on Noon Edition. That's for sure. He's a very well spoken man, and he talks very glowingly about what's going on in Kokomo. You know, you've got boots on the ground in Kokomo, as they say. So, you know, what's your evaluation of how well city government's being run there?
I think Mayor Goodnight's done a really good job of managing the city finances. When he was elected 8 years ago, there was about a $5 million deficit. The previous mayor had just spent all of the economic development income tax money. In fact, Mayor Goodnight, before he took office in November, announced that 12 or 11 firefighters that had been through training and were going to start in January, he announced that they're not going to join the fire department. He's through attrition reduced the workforce by 20% and was able to then secure money to embrace the quality of place, economic development philosophy that Michael Hicks at the Center for Business and Economic Research espouses. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of developments in the past year, the new baseball stadium, a YMCA is going to open in February. There was a parking garage with apartments on top. And a new development for about 200 higher-end apartments with some retail on the bottom floor across from the baseball stadium has been planned. So
both cities are moving forward.
Yes.
It's interesting, though, in the past year, both cities have faced lawsuits over some of these issues that both with the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
That. Maybe you can explain that more, and then you with sludge, which hopefully you can explain that more too. Give us the thumbnail version of that.
We're all about sludge.
Yeah, but first of all, if you can explain the ballpark and kind of where we are now, if that's all.
I think where we're at with the ballpark now that the legislature's not in session, 2 months after the legislature was not in session, everything was fine.
So for people who don't understand the backstory, why was the legislature involved in a ballpark in Kokomo?
We have a state senator who sponsored a bill for emergency hearing where he wanted to stop the construction of the baseball stadium because part of the parcels where it was located. Were mitigated for flooding back in the 90s. So there were like eight parcels that there were restrictions on what you could and couldn't use those parcels for. But these parcels were very, very small in the scheme of things. There was a lot of negotiations back and forth between the city FEMA and the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. Threats were made. I think FEMA actually cut off all flood mitigation funding for the entire state until this was resolved. But honestly, it got resolved and everything's fine.
They had really good attendance, I think, and now they're the same group is building a ballpark.
In Lafayette.
Yeah.
So what about sludge, Max?
Well,
if you can
it's funny
this.
How almost every big story in the past year goes back to the city's financial crisis, and that's where the whole sludge thing comes from. Terre Haute's been in the process of building a new wastewater treatment plant, something that had been needed probably for 50 years. And it has been underway, and it's going fine. They're going to get that thing finished, and it's going to be a big benefit for the community. In the meantime, it became apparent that it had a greater capacity at this new wastewater plant to handle and process sludge from not only its own sewer plant, but from any sewer plants around the area that wanted to bring their sludge to Terre Haute for processing. As Mayor Bennett has said many times throughout the years, that Terre Haute doesn't have a spending problem, it has a revenue problem. And his way of resolving part of his revenue problem, since property tax caps weren't raising enough money to keep the city going the way it was going, he was out looking for new projects. And what he came up with is a public-private partnership that had to do with the sludge issue. The theory was that they could generate enough sludge that they could build a plant that would convert sludge to diesel and to diesel fuel. And using a very complex series of contracts between various partners, private partners, the city was, in theory, going to be able to raise millions of dollars a year to help take care of its revenue problems. Well, it sounded great on paper, and there was a lot of talk about how technically, yes, this may be possible, but no such plan existed on the face of this earth. So it had never been tested in real life. And so the partnerships began to get a little stretched and frayed. And at one point, one of the original partners in this sludge to diesel project that had been dreamed up felt like they hadn't been treated properly and turned around and sued the city for some ridiculous amount, $72 million or something silly. But the suit was made in federal court for breach of contract and various other sundry offenses that this company perceived that had been done to it. So that really put the city of Terre Haute in quite a spot. Not only now do they have to defend themselves in federal court against this breach of contract lawsuit, it's having to pay a lot of money to an expensive Indianapolis law firm that charges close to $500 an hour for its services. So it's you know, it truly is costing the city a bunch of money for a project that they said was no risk from the start, absolutely no risk to the city. It was all reward, no risk. And, of course, what we're seeing now is not only they're paying high prices for this legal defense, but there's always a possibility that they could have some sort of judgment against them. Remains to be seen. But even if they don't end up having to pay any sort of legal fees or any legal penalty for what they did, they're certainly going to be out of pocket for all of these legal fees that they've had to pay over the course of the year. So that's kind of our sad sludge story. it would have been great if they could have produced this sludge to diesel project and been the only one in the world. But it probably was never going to be destined to happen, and the city got a little ahead of itself.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Noon Edition on WFIU today. We're pre-recording. I'm Bob Zaltzberg here with Sarah Whitmire, and you were just listening to Max Jones from the Terre Haute Tribune Star and Jeff Kovaleski from the Kokomo Tribune. We're going to talk about some Bloomington issues here for a minute, and then we're going to broaden this out because there are a lot of state issues we want to talk about. You know, in Bloomington, we talked about both of the mayors. There's a Bloomington mayoral election this year. Mark 12 years as mayor of Bloomington. I personally think he did a lot of good for the city. He kept things going. I still think Bloomington has become more of an arts destination than it ever was before. One of his big deals was that the arts and quality of life are economic development. So he tried to play to Bloomington's strengths in those areas. There are some that would argue that while he did that, a lot of things in terms of the gross domestic product or whatever really went down the tubes. We had a guest column in our paper by a retired IU economics professor who basically said the MSA for the Bloomington area ranked somewhere like 361st out of 365 MSAs in terms of economic growth over the last 5 years. He was very critical of the way the local economy has grown in the last 5 years. I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to argue with Bill Witte. I think he probably had some great data to base that on. Bloomington does, though, continue to be a great place to live and to work, and I think there's some things on the forefront, like a tech park downtown and a new switchyard park that is going to be built, and we've got the Beeline Trail going through, and a lot of new technical kind of jobs that are coming in. So things aren't, you know, they aren't perfect in Bloomington after 12 years of the Mark Krzyzan administration, but I think that they're still pretty darn good. So we, of course, elected John Hamilton to be mayor, and he's taking office today. It'll be Friday. We're pre-recording, of course, but it'll be today, Friday. He'll be taking office, and the Hamilton administration will be much different, I think, from the Krzyzan administration. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to watch what happens there.
I wanted to ask your opinion about the tech park in particular, because that's something that mm-hmm. Hamilton and Krzyzan differed on. So what's next for that?
Well, what's next for the tech park is you know, there are people who are basically have sent in, you know, projects that they'd like to do. And the city, the disagreement was, you know, Mark Krzyzan was really pushing, had a letter of intent from an Indianapolis developer to build in the tech park. And then a second developer, a local developer, came forward with another project. The issue that where John Hamilton differed with Mark Krzyzan was Hamilton believed there weren't enough protections in place to make the development be the kind of sort of multi-family, multi-use development rather than just become another student housing project downtown. So John Hamilton was not in favor of either one of those projects, as it turned out. The idea was the developers kind of got the idea and said, we're going to back off until after the first year and a new administration takes over. So there's 12 acres right in the middle of the city, 6 acres. The projects that were on that we've been writing about were basically 6 acres of it, and that was the two projects that were being discussed, which would have been some residential, some high-tech office space, parking facilities, would have reused some of the old IU buildings that are in that area. And then there's another 6 acres that is sort of geared toward lower-income housing and some other things of that nature. I don't have all the details in front of me, but that's going to be a big issue next year as to how that 12 acres builds out, because that's going to be, you know, a big project and right in the middle of downtown Bloomington. For you guys, you know, it's right behind our city hall, the old showers complex, and sort of includes some of those old showers buildings. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it'll be interesting. But, you know, Mark Krzyzan is out now. John Hamilton's in. John Hamilton is very interested in he's probably a more progressive, using the political term progressive, mayor than even Krzyzan was. And people thought Krzyzan was very progressive and liberal. Hamilton is, you know, he's very interested in social issues and social justice issues, and mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see how that progresses. Yeah.
I know you want to broaden it out to talk mm-hmm. about state issues, but before we do, mm-hmm. just a similarity between Terre Haute and Bloomington. Mm-hmm. You know where I'm going. Crows.
Crows. Yeah.
I think John Hamilton may be coming to you all for advice on this.
Well, we were more than glad to share that crow problem with Bloomington. It would be interesting to see what if the same sort of approach that has somewhat mitigated the crow problem in Terre Haute, although, you know, it probably depends on who you talk to at any given point. But Yeah, when I leave work at night and walk out into the street, it sounds like fireworks on the 4th of July going off all over town, and everybody's trying to move the crows to one place or another. And like I say, it's been moderately successful. Again, it depends on who you talk to.
Right. Well, we did a whole show on crows last week, and we were able to fill an hour talking about the crow issues. That'll probably come back. There are a lot of other Bloomington issues. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them because we've got a very broad audience. But we did have in our city government and county government, we've had our share of corruption in the last 3 or 4 years, which I've been here a long time, and it seems like it's all cropped up fairly recently. We had a city former city employee in engineering in the public works department convicted and sentenced this year. He basically had a scam going where he stole more than, they're differing amounts of money, but more than $400,000. There's a parks official that was arrested and charged this year with stealing more than $400,000. There was a county jail official that was arrested and charged this year with stealing more than $200,000. These things are just going on. Our county auditor's office has been a mess for several years, and that's under investigation again, although for a much lower amount of money. So it's been more public corruption in our area than we were used to seeing. And then the one other story from Bloomington I do want to mention is, because it was number one on our HT newsroom list just from a vote of our newsroom staff, and admittedly it's a very narrow sampling, but the Hannah Wilson case, an IU student who was found murdered in Brown County, and the guy that's charged with that killing will be going to court this year. We'll see if it gets done in 2016 or not, but it's always a scary, tragic, horrible story when someone who's a student at IU come down, parents entrust their student to the university, and then some tragedy happens, especially tragic when it's a murder. I mean, they're all tragic, if any death, but a murder is particularly tragic. So, there are a lot of other Bloomington stories we're not going to be able to get to today. Same with you guys, although we can talk about more Terre Haute and Kokomo stories. But there's some state stories that were huge. I wrote an editorial and said, this is going to be the year of RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. In Terre Haute, in Kokomo, how big was that story earlier this year? Jeff?
It was huge.
Yeah.
I think I was here like a couple of years ago and I said this was going to be the big thing that year.
I remember that.
And it was like the year after, right? I just don't believe that Governor Pence is going to sign a bill extending civil rights protections to LGBT unless there is some sort of an accommodation for business owners who practice their personal faith. I don't think he's going to do it.
And how do you think that's going to play around the state of Indiana?
Well, I don't think that he cares. I really honestly don't. I think that this is his personal conviction, and no poll or majority of Hoosiers are going to sway him. It's not going to happen.
There's a big prediction right there from Jeff Koval.
Yeah, I'm surprised just considering the so-called RFRA fix that he had to do this year.
He did the RFRA fix, and he was attacked from both the left and the right. He knows that there's a no-win situation here, that some group is going to be offended. Because the Senate had issued a statement on, a proposal to do just that, have some sort of a accommodation for small businesses, I think they've telegraphed to everybody, this is what we're going to get. There's not going to be four words and a comma. There's not going to be just civil rights protections and we're done. There's going to be some give and take. And I think that if the LGBT community and fair-minded Hoosiers want to see civil rights protections, they're going to have to compromise.
Max, do you agree with our buddy Jeff there?
Well, I think he certainly makes a good point. It's the legislature is going to be so tied up with this issue that you wonder if it'll be able to accomplish much of anything. And I think they would like to have had it done by now. But the reason you haven't seen a compromise raised or put forward yet that is acceptable to people is the fact that they're just going to have a real difficult time coming to grips with this issue. In Terre Haute, right now, that's our delegation, our legislative delegation is swung to the conservative side. We only have, there's only one Democrat elected official that's serving in an area that used to be dominated by Democrats. So it's not like there are any votes on the Democrat side or even on a more moderate side to come out of West Central Indiana where we are. When you're dealing with the supermajority in the legislature and you're dealing with a socially conservative, ideological governor, I would have to say Jeff may have a point and that the governor may not be able to deal with this adequately, and he may not be reelected because of it.
Sarah, so what I want to get your take on this. I mean, from how if what Jeff says is true and we have a divisive session this year where there are people that want the four words and a comma solution, which basically is just equal protection under the law for, based on sexual orientation and gender identity, equal protection. But yet there's the sort of asterisk that says equal protection, except when you're dealing with small businesses. How's that going to play around the country? When people are looking at the state of Indiana, is this going to just continue that image that sort of came out in RFRA last year? What do you think?
I guess that's the reason that I might disagree, because I think that Pence is so concerned about the business economy. I mean, it seems like every day we're getting some sort of media advisory about him attending an announcement about 25 jobs here or 25 here. And we saw it in Indy after RFRA and after the fix, where they had all the signs where you could pose next to them and show that we were a friendly, welcoming state. And I think there is a sense of, and I could be totally wrong, but it feels like there's a sense to just let's get this done with. And if they can pass some sort of compromise early, but I don't know if that's possible. This year it was almost like they were able to get it through before opposition was really aware of what was even happening. Like we didn't see the Freedom Indianas get on board really until it was kind of a done deal.
Well, nobody was listening to them. Nobody's paying any attention.
Because you and I have talked about this, mm-hmm. where we were kind of guilty of it too, just saying, oh, it mirrors federal law, and just kind of almost stopping at that. And it wasn't until they really got involved and said, wait a minute, no, there's some key differences, and here they are.
Right. It's going to be another big fight. The ACLU, I had a meeting with Jane Hinninger in the last week or so, and the ACLU's gearing up, although it's a very sensitive issue for them because they want to defend, religious freedom as well. But, Jane can certainly talk for herself much more eloquently than I can. But what I came out of that conversation thinking is, this is about equal protection. It's not about, a small business can refuse to make a cake for a gay couple, but not just because they're a gay couple. If the couple comes in and they're, rowdy or they're impossible to work with or any other reason, then of course they can turn down serving that couple. But they can't do it just based solely on the fact that they disagree with their lifestyle decisions. There are a lot of things that are going to come up in the legislature. What about a minister that doesn't want to marry? That's a non-issue. Those are already in place. There are ministers, there are religious people of religious faith that will not do wedding ceremonies for people of other religious faiths. That's been the way it is, and that's not going to change. All these issues are going to come out, and then the state is going to have this big public battle, I believe. And what Jeff says may very well be true, that when it comes down to the end of it, that we'll have some kind of compromise. But I'm not sure that a compromise is going to be good enough in the eyes of the rest of the nation looking at Indiana.
The one thing in the proposed legislation, I'm curious because I don't remember in your cities and in Bloomington, is that you wouldn't be able to have these individual anti-discrimination statutes, which a lot of places passed in the wake of RFRA.
That's true.
That's Kokomo the way we has one
and Terre Haute. And
Kokomo doesn't have one.
Kokomo does not. They didn't pass one.
Kokomo said it would, but nothing happened because of the November election, I suppose. And a new city council will take office today. That's going to be a part of their first few, I think, tasks. But Indiana has a history of the state legislature saying, all those gun ordinances that your cities had, yeah, those don't work anymore because we passed this all-inclusive statewide gun law. This is nothing new for Indiana, for the legislature to tell cities and counties that, you know, any kind of a additional ordinance that you pass is going to be superseded by ours. So that was one of the arguments that the Kokomo City Council was giving us, was that it doesn't matter what we pass. It's going to be superseded by whatever the legislature does. And then my argument, our argument at the editorial board was, but you need to lead and make a case for the state legislature to do the same. And a lot of communities did this year, which I thought was really surprising.
It's more symbolic.
Mm-hmm. So okay. we've gotten into this topic, and we've gone a little bit beyond where our break should be, but we're going to have to take a short break right now, and then we'll be back with another 20, 25 minutes of our program. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
This is Noon Edition on WFIU. Production support comes from Smithville Fiber, online at smithville.com, and IU School of Public Health Bloomington, online at publichealth.indiana.edu. WFIU News covers South Central Indiana and the state each day. You can read news throughout the day as it's posted on our website at wfiunews.org. And you can pick up a digest of all the top stories. It's like a newspaper delivered to your inbox each weekday afternoon. It's a free and easy way to stay on top of not only the headlines, but also the in-depth audio, video, and print news stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe right now at WFIUnews.org.
All right. Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg from the Herald Times, along with co-host Sarah Whitmire from WFIU and WTIU. And we have two guests in the studio with us today, Max Jones from the Terre Haute Tribune Star and Jeff Kovaleski from the Kokomo Tribune. I'm sorry you can't give us a call today. We're having a pre-recorded discussion for New Year's Day, our New Year's Day program. It's about 2015 and what we're looking ahead to 2016. Right before the break, we were talking about RFRA and what we're expecting to see in the legislature in 2016. So I want to sort of morph that into a conversation about the elections that are coming up. I mean, is this going to be a watershed issue when it comes to the election of 2016 for governor and other legislators? Jeff, what do you think?
I guess it depends on what the final legislation looks like. But I think the governor has already, whether deservedly or not, been painted as a very socially conservative person. He has made comments in the past and during the RFRA discussions that this is something that's not on Hoosier's radar. He was wrong about that. I think he's going to need some help from the legislature to change people's impressions of his deeply held beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Max?
It's going to be a tremendously interesting election this year. There's so many factors at work when it comes to a statewide election. I mean, we have the national election that could end up having a great bearing on things like turnout and overall mood in general leading up to it. But it could end up being that the gubernatorial race in Indiana actually has more interest than the presidential race does in the state. And I think that I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be intensely competitive. I think you'll see a different Mike Pence next year campaigning than what we saw the last time. I think he knows that he can't be soft in his campaign strategy like he was 4 years ago. He just can't afford to be that way this time around. You know, John Gregg ran well 4 years ago, and there's no reason to believe that that he's weaker than what he was then. And in fact, he'll run a different race too. I think he'll start much stronger. Part of the problem he had 4 years ago that he got a terribly weak start, and it really wasn't until the last maybe 6 weeks of the campaign that he finally found his campaign legs and began to take advantage of the Pence campaign's unwillingness to play hardball. So John Gregg will have to be ready for that. They'll come after him a lot harder this year. There'll be a tremendous amount of money that will just pour into the state, into this gubernatorial race. But it's not just RFRA. I think the civil rights area is a problem that will be talked about a lot, but there's a whole lot more. I think the whole statewide educational issues that have cropped up in the last 4 years will end up also being a very dominating topic. And of course, now we have the whole ISTEP debacle that is going to be keeping all of this very fresh. The Glenda Ritz presence in this election could be very interesting. I think this, you may say it, a watershed election in a lot of different ways. And just like 2 years ago, we saw this tremendous swing solidifying the supermajority in the Republican side. I think Brian Howie, the statewide columnist, made the point that, you know, you could actually be looking potentially at a year in Indiana swinging it as heavily back in the other direction as what it had swung in the conservative favor. That may be going a little far, but I understand his point, and it is something that's worth looking at, that if the stars align just right, and they're up there ready to be aligned, but if they do, you could see a really significant change in Indiana politics this year.
You're not willing to predict that Democratic swing, though. Right?
You know, every time I predict something on this show, it's the opposite of what you remember. I had Hillary Clinton being president 8 years ago, so it probably doesn't matter much what nobody wants me to predict in their favor.
Right.
So, but I think it's quite possible you could see some dramatic swings.
Well, I want to ask Sarah from a statewide standpoint. I mean, what's the issue with Sue Elsperman not backing out of running for lieutenant governor, being touted as possibly the next Ivy Tech president? I mean, do you see anything behind the scenes on that? Do you think she wasn't lined up with Pence?
That's what I've heard. I'm wondering if you all heard the same thing.
Is that Howie reported?
Yeah, we reported that too. Our State House reporter alluded to the fact that there were issues behind the scenes that they disagreed on RFRA. And in effect, he was kind of showing her the door and saying, apply for this. That's why I'm wondering if there's actually maybe sort of a divide forming in the Republican Party. When we did our reporting on regional cities in the announcement, and Pence announced, well, we're going to award it to three cities, and we don't really have the funding for this third one, but he's going to go to the legislature and ask for it. Brian Bosma was shocked and had no idea that the governor was intending to do this, and told us in an interview that it would have been really nice to have a heads up. I mean, he's very candid about it, which made us start to think, I wonder if Pence is losing some support. You know, I don't know. I'm curious what you all think.
I think it's a real issue for him, and it will become become more apparent within the Republican Party this year as when you're so big and you have such a heavy supermajority, not everybody can love each other all the time. And that group has shown really even in the last 2 to 4 years that there are some sharp divisions within that party. It's that way even nationally in the Republican Party, as we see during their primary. So to a certain degree, you see that in Indiana too. And there's some of those legislators who will probably keep their distance from a Pence campaign and will get along with him the best they can to govern the state, but it's not going to be a big love-in among the Republicans this year.
Well, there are other state issues, other state elections that are going to be interesting. The U.S. Senate race, with Dan Coats retiring from the Senate. I mean, from your parts of the state, is there a front runner for the Senate race? And that would be, and down here we hear an awful lot about Todd Young, of course, because he's the 9th District Congressman here. But I wonder, how he's comparing statewide to Eric Holcomb and Marlon Stutzman. Are they the only other two in the race, I believe? So,
Holcomb has been more aggressive, trying to meet with media. Traveling to different counties and trying to meet with Republicans. So just because he's been so aggressive, I would give him as the favorite right now.
Mm-hmm. Max, anything from Terre Haute? Are you hearing from those people or anything?
Because Terre Haute tends to be more leans Democratic, at least in Vigo County, it's really hard for us to say, but I know Marlon Stutzman has spent a lot of time in West Central Indiana, and he had the benefits of a statewide race a few years ago when he ran in that primary that Coates won. So it's not that he's an unknown character, but I would think that Todd Young is, because of the money he's going to have among Republicans in our area, he may be the one that would that would rule the day, and Democrats just don't look like they have a tremendously strong candidate to go against them.
Well, Barron Hill, right?
Barron Hill will be the one, and even though he does okay, he's never been able to run a good statewide race, and it could be that Senate race could be immune from these other dynamics going on in Indiana politics. That one may be kind of separate and not get drug into the vortex of that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll be. Barron's certainly got some good name recognition. He in our part of the state, and so I don't know. I think he'll be probably geared up and run a pretty decent race if he's the guy who's running against whoever the Republican nominee is. But the Republicans in Indiana are always going to be strong. I want to remind our listeners that we're having a conversation about 2015 and looking forward to 2016. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times, along with Sarah Whitmire from WFIU, WTIU, and we have Max Jones from the Terre Haute Tribune Star, Jeff Kovaleski from the Kokomo Tribune, and we're just having a conversation. We're pre-recorded for this New Year's Day show, so you can't give us a call. Anything else about the election? Let me just say that I moderated a Republican primary debate forum for the 9th district, and what struck me about that was the four candidates were there. There are five in the race, four were there, and three of the four lined up to try to out-conservative the other. And the one person who was the more moderate was Greg Zeller, our attorney general. And they're all running against Zeller. And Brent Waltz, the state senator, was running the most heavily. I mean, he was in attack mode against Zeller for, votes he's taken, positions that are votes he took in the legislature, I guess, when he was there, but positions that he's taken as the attorney general. And so it'll be interesting in the 9th district to see how that comes out, because we won't have an incumbent in that race either.
Yeah. Greg Zeller's had no trouble winning re-election as attorney general.
Right.
I want to ask you quickly just about the presidential election, because I'm sure Politico did this gigantic article about how Terre Haute goes, the rest of the country goes. So what's your feeling about how Terre Haute's going to go?
Well, you know, I think it's probably a little early to say yet. You need to see who the candidates are. There will be a lot at work. Terre Haute does have this uncanny record, and you know, we've been writing about this for seems like 30 years. And in every presidential election that comes along, the record stays intact. So it is pretty remarkable. There's a lot of people paying a lot more attention to Terre Haute politics than they did a few decades ago, and it's because of this. At this point, it'd be kind of crazy to say Hillary Clinton, I would think, would run very well. I think she'd be pretty hard to beat, even though somebody like a Donald Trump would have his fans in Terre Haute, Vigo County, and West Central Indiana. He'd certainly probably win a Republican primary there without any problem. But whether or not somebody like that could actually beat Hillary Clinton in Vigo County, I have a hard time believing that could be the case. If those two ended up being the candidates, I would think that Trump would have a real terrible time in Vigo County. He might win Indiana, but he'd have trouble in Vigo County.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring up one of the other huge news stories of the year in the state of Indiana, which was the HIV outbreak in Scott County. And I believe it was probably last year on this program that I'm not sure who was here that day that predicted that might be one of the biggest story of the year in 2015. And if it wasn't for RFRA, it very well mm-hmm. might have been. In Monroe County, you know, we've just been approved for a needle exchange program because there have been a lot of overdoses of opioid drugs, and you know, there are issues, obviously drug issues in Monroe, and that the officials are trying to get ahead of. But have there been issues in Howard County or in Vigo County involving, you know, HIV, opioid overdoses, drug use?
Definitely opioid. We had 25. It was the middle of the year in 2015. So at, you know, from January to like May or June, we had 25 drug overdoses, and I think in particularly our area, we had a pill mill closed. It was known to be a pill mill for a while. When it closed, it just pushed everyone from, you know, the prescription narcotics to heroin. And I think, you know, our issue is like the nation's issue. I think that we've become a nation that has gotten used to having prescription drugs for back pain, for aches and pains, and now we're starting to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very similar in Vigo County. Its numbers have been very high in terms of a lot of the same markers that showed up in southeastern Indiana. It's something that hasn't consumed Vigo County to the extent that it did others, and part of the reason may be because meth is still such a presence in Vigo County that the heroin and the opioids have not run out meth yet. There are still a lot of problems with various forms of drug abuse, and we do have some HIV problems and hepatitis problems in our county, but as yet the county has not asked for a needle exchange. They haven't felt like it's risen to that level yet, but it's something that they're constantly keeping an eye on, and it's not that we don't have problems, but the problem hasn't morphed as far as it has in other areas.
Gosh, you guys, we only have about 3 or 4 minutes to go, so we need to hit some other issues. Sarah, what else do you want to talk about today?
Well, I was going to stay on the issue of drugs because our State House reporter says this session is going to be the quote-unquote drug session. He thinks it might end up playing out to be bigger than RFRA, because also we're talking about pseudoephedrine, because of the Indiana ranks worst in the country for meth. And folks we've talked to with the DEA say that it's a far bigger problem here than heroin, mm-hmm. even. So I'll just add that.
Okay.
Something else, I mean, BMV overcharges, they had a huge mess this year, which affected your areas.
Absolutely.
some other ones on your list I know too. Jared Fogle.
Jared Fogle, oh my gosh. You know, Bloomington guy makes good and then makes very, very bad. You know, I mean, that was a big story, obviously, in 2015. I just want to mention for 2016, I mean, there are a lot of other localized stories, but one big story that's going to affect all of us, bicentennial year. Are you guys looking forward to it in Kokomo, Terre Haute? I mean, what big events going on?
We have, a couple of the commissions, you know, that were set up for each county. And there's about five or six activities that are going to be going on.
I don't want to get too deeply into this without just saying, does anybody care? Bicentennial year?
That's a good question. There'll be some interest in it, but I don't think it's going to be a huge party.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? What else? What other big issues do we face? We're not talking on education that much because the state impact Indiana people, I think, cover that very well.
That's going to be something to follow this session for sure. I'd say
highway funding.
Infrastructure.
Huge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, just to piggyback on what Max had said about, you know, a seeming to be the schism in the Republican Party, this might be the issue that forces that to open. You're going to have a lot of legislators who sign some no tax increase pledge, and you know, House leadership is going to go before its members and say, this is our plan. We would like to raise the cigarette tax by a dollar and raise the pump tax, and tie it to inflation. I think that's a smart move. I think that you need to have a long-term fix as opposed to a short-term just fix it and then we'll worry about it down the road. I respect Brian Bosma for coming out and coming up with a long-term fix. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
All right. And I think we're out of time. I'm sorry to say it because we have a lot of other topics that we could talk about. I do think the infrastructure, as you said, is going to be a big issue. Of course, in Bloomington, here, southern Indiana, I-69 has been a big story for many years and finally opened this year it's all the way from Evansville to Bloomington. And as you guys know from driving down here today, a lot of construction going on. But I want to thank you both for being here. Max Jones, Jeff Kovaleski, it's always great to have you guys down here and to talk news with you. Sarah, it's good to have you on, and we'll be back together next week.
Absolutely.
Right? All right.
Thanks.
Good to see you. So I want to thank all our listeners. Happy New Year to you all. I want to also thank James Gray, our producer, and engineer Mike Pashkash for being here today for pre-recording this show. I'm Bob Zaltz. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at WFIU.org.
Production support comes from School of Public Health Bloomington. Public Health Reimagined. Addressing 21st century health challenges with a multidisciplinary approach to disease prevention, health promotion, and enhancing quality of life. publichealth.indiana.edu. And Smithville Fiber, the GigaCity Company. Fiber Internet, HD, and digital IPTV in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com.